document that we were dealing with yesterday, burdened up again, another working
day. Yeah. Okay, so maybe I'll just quickly explain what I mentioned with the GPs. All the comments are ready for us to be consultation. So, for my own convenience, and you have to take the committee. Otherwise, we will jump, and people are jumping down for us.
Was ready to mention all of any role of Treasury, even though one of the aspects of Court Order was service on provincial national Treasury. So I don't know, I think it would be useful to just get from Treasury whether they have in fact played any role in these both.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'm Janine Bednar-Kiyose, and I'm one of the directors in the legal services in National Treasury. Just briefly to describe some of the role that the National Treasury has played in respect of court judgments. In terms of non-payment of court orders, particularly by national departments, if they have not been satisfied by the paid by the national departments within the required time frames in the Makoro order, then the certified copies of the court orders along with a certificate of court has been submitted to the legal services in National Treasury, and then the legal services has played a role in following up with the departments to ensure that there is payment affected. It has been the experience that, from my understanding, I haven't dealt with those court orders directly myself, but colleagues in the unit have, that generally, at that stage, especially if there's a potential threat of attachment of state property, then the department concerned has ended up affecting the necessary payment. So that has generally been the experience. I'm not exactly sure of the number of court cases that have been handled, but there have been a fair number of court judgments that have been handled through the legal services. But the experience, from what I've been advised, is that the departments concerned have ultimately ended up paying for those court judgments. Thank you.
Thank you,
Honorable
Chair. The first case in my report yesterday, I'm not sure whether you did a copy of the report that was in yesterday. Was it took almost a year for one judgment, the minimum amount to be paid by each client department. And what is of concern to us is the minimal role that we take. In a sense that when a judgment is been brought to our attention in respect or of a particular client department, we then bring it to the attention of the particular department, in all of the reference department to decide the particular date. Now, in terms of satisfying the judgment in respect of the interim order made by the Mahoro judgment, it was 38 years. Now, to what extent did you, in the interim, or a mechanism that you can or you have put in place in order to ensure that it doesn't take too long to satisfy a particular judgment, especially the one coming in money?
We're going to organize that before this meeting comes to an end. We get just a table that shows the cases that were referred to the treasurer. I'm also going to speak to what happened to those cases specifically. The number of cases that were referred to the treasurer, and all of them, as Jimin says, were honored by the department's consent. So, subsequent to the oral order, all those certificates that were served with the treasury. Treasury does not play a role in certifying, but once the certificate is issued by the court and that certificate is made available to the treasury, what the treasury has done is to communicate with the respective department, and there are specific departments, not a lot of them, very few departments, national departments that have been affected, and all of those orders have been met, and I'm going to request that they send us that now and they will be available.
Sorry, I don't think that's adequate. We are here deliberating on the bill now. We don't want to report this evening or when we finish. We want it now, and we asked for that report over a month ago.
You see, perhaps I should have opened this meeting as I did yesterday and reminded ourselves. Constitutional Court ruling has said they're giving Parliament until August of this year to bring changes to the State Amnesty Act. What that means is that this committee has to try and finalize consideration of the bill possibly this week, either today or tomorrow. We only come back after the recess. Please also bear in mind there's an NCOP process. We play no role in how that develops. Similarly, when the Parliament either approves or withdraws, assuming it approves the bill, it is then sent to the President. The President, a lot of people simply assume that when he gets it from the National Assembly, he signs it, he doesn't. President then refers it to his own legal aid, and they require a certain period of time in which to ensure the bill will pass constitutional muster. So we don't really have the luxury of time, and hence Jeffrey's annoyance. We did request that you provide us with information. Prior to your arrival here today, you would have received the document. You're organizing it. All right. Getting it this evening doesn't help. Honourable members, just to also remind you, we would like to sit tomorrow with Mr. Benyoni and go see who is Honourable Dean Smart. Well, we're targeting the midday to stop. Well, it depends on how we go.
On a point process for future reference, could we, when we have all these drafts, get numbers? draft number, whatever date is, whatever, what least date on, so we know, because really it's getting to the point now we have with nothing different. Really, what does that mean? Can we see the date that we can all see? Because it's not the fourth of the sixth, all the sixth of the fourth. So.
Alright. we'll try to do that. Fortunately, today's document has a date here. Yeah,
sounds like a litany of excuses, but let me first explain why the treasury document is not on the table yet. The minister hasn't signed off on it, but there is a proposal. I can share the proposal since the question says what is the attitude of the treasury. It's not asking what the treasury's position is, but treasury wants that there be an effective satisfaction of orders by departments. And Treasury prefers that responsibility should lie where it rightly belongs, that is with the department concerned. And therefore, in the proposal that the Treasury has drafted, hopefully they'll be signed off today, and then can be made to the committee, we are trying to get as close as possible to the Muhoro judgment without using Treasury as the payer of the last resort. As you will recall, that in that judgment, Treasury becomes the payer of the last resort. What the proposal that Treasury is putting forward is that any such order must be a charge against the vote, against the appropriated budget for that particular department. And therefore, if the accounting officer is not satisfying that within a reasonable period, which in this instance is the time frame that was required by the judge. In the last meeting, I indicated an appetite for a certain process that allows the treasury a little bit more time than was allowed in the court judgment. Be that as it may, let me go to the point. The point is that if the accounting officer is not satisfying that, then the treasury would consider, and of course this is subject to the approval of the minister, that amount of money relating to that order be withheld from the vote of the department until such time that there is evidence from the department that there is a payment that has been processed to meet that obligation, and then those funds are released to meet that obligation. But the payment is still done by the department. So essentially, that's what the Treasury is putting on the table. And we hope that the discussion with the minister is not going to take away from this threat. It could add a one or two perspectives that will enhance and strengthen that position. But that is the attitude of the Treasury, that it must be satisfied and it must be satisfied satisfactorily within the ambit of the law. The PFMA requires that court orders be met within 30 days from the date of the court order. So any action by the accounting officer that does not agree with this is already financial misconduct. And that being financial misconduct requires that the executive authorities of those accounting officers should be taking action. So we should not be in this position in the first place. But that's what the Treasury says it would do. And I want our committee's indulgence for the fact that the minister hasn't yet signed on this, but that is the proposal that was put on the table. I hope that answers the question.
I think it's a good signal of progress from what we've had before, but I just want to know why in these cases that we've had from on yesterday's report from the code, why did it not get made straight away? Because it's all very well saying that, and it's quite correct, but there hasn't been any action taken against the accounting office. So how are we going to be confident that it's going to change? Now, I also don't like to legislate for incompetence or inefficiency, and I think that's very much often what we're doing here. Because if people were doing their jobs properly, then it wouldn't actually be a problem. Now, what way can we force, is there any legislative way to force departments somehow, I mean, not in this bar, I don't imagine, but MFMA or PFMA or whatever, to force departments to provide for either a general contingency fund for court settlements or court judgments, or if you have, particularly in the case of a big claim, as soon as you receive a summons from the next budget year or whatever, you have to budget for the amount of the claim. Obviously, it may be settled for less or more, but at least the budget is the amount of the claim. Set it aside as a contingent claim against that department. Is there any way we can enforce that? Is there anything stopping us from saying that? And I just know that from Treasury. And what were the reasons why the other bonds weren't paid? I mean, what were the practical problems? Was it people just didn't do what they were supposed to do? Was it the fact that there wasn't money available? And if not, why not? Can we have any idea on that, please?
Thank you, Chair. The list that we've just received from the State Attorney is I had sight of the list that was in the Treasury. I don't remember some of these names, but once that list comes, it will answer that question. My sense is that these specific ones may have not come through to us, because the ones that came through to us since the Mokoro judgment, we followed up with the department and the department seconded them. Once we get our list, we'll be able to reconfirm, and we're going to be getting our list in the next few minutes. We have confirmed to the office that they are sending it through. We just have to go over the logistics of just ensuring that it's printed and it's made available, and I'll make a reconciliation. So before this committee adjourns, I will have answered that question adequately. On the question of budgeting for known and expected liabilities, there is nothing prohibiting any department from making that budget. As soon as the department knows that they are going to have expenditure of one nature or the other, whether that expenditure relates to settling a court judgment, they ought to budget for that. In any event, they should be budgeting for the legal expenses relating to that process. And they should then also budget for, if the outcome of that is likely to be negative, that budget, that should be included in the budget of the department. And there would be nothing stopping the department. So your question is a very direct question. How do you force the department to budget for this? And I like your statement, because this is part of the discussion in the Treasury that says that you can't legislate for inefficiency. As we're engaging with this discussion in the Treasury, I've heard that statement at least three times every 5 minutes in the discussion that we've been having. People in the Treasury saying, we understand the predicament, but can you really legislate for inefficiency? What should be happening here is that once the accounting officers are not doing what they're supposed to do, the executive authorities are supposed to be beating up those accounting officers. And it's not happening. Most of the challenges that we face as a government, particularly just related to these issues of honoring the obligations of the state, lies at the center of us as a government not being able to take the actions that should be taken when people depart from the expected norm, depart from the legislation. And that's where the difficulty is with the Treasury. We in the PFMA, there's already sufficient provisions that deal with this matter. Court orders must pay within this period. And then the process of enforcing that is there. But as we have experienced, the Nyati case is part of the history that we really do not want to see in this country. And as such, we're making those provisions in this instance that money be pulled aside and withheld, and then until the department is providing us with the evidence that they have made they processed the payment and the money is going to flow to the judgment creditor. Judgment debtor. Creditor, yes. To the judgment creditor. So that's what we put on the table. But under normal circumstances, we would have loved a situation in which the current pieces of legislation are being enforced. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. For you, Ms. Nungalo, one of your challenges is the responsibility upon particular departments where an order has been made against in order to comply with it. And your hands are tied, say, to rely on what the government provides in terms of actions that ought to be made out against certain accounting officers in terms of PFMA. Similarly, with us as an attorney on behalf of the state, struggling to find instructions from client department in order to defend or settle matters, the same type of a headache, if I put it mildly. Have you given thought to the fact that, one, when we act on behalf of client departments, we are paying the advocate for legal facility for practitioners who act on behalf of the state. Now, is there a way that we can cut directly with the chair to the chase and say we as a state attorney, any claim, any amount of specified particular judgment that we can pay as a state attorney, as much as we pay our legal responsibility to satisfy the particular judgment, is there a framework that we can establish, take into account now we pay on behalf of the department and then we'll cover it from to agency fee. Is there a way that we can directly cut to the chase and effect not only the legal cost but the principal debt?
Chair, I appreciate the sentiment, but if the colleague were to also note that the biggest debt that is owed between state agencies, one of the biggest debts that are owed between state agencies are debts owed by client departments to the state attorneys. So that debt will increase. So it doesn't solve the problem. It just shifts the problem to a different place.
And what's left now is trying to slug it out with the state attorney, from my side. Then you'll be forced to have a treasury to come in and pay. And if you don't pay, we reduce your budget. So it's very innovative, and we're finding it very attractive. Well, I think.
Chair, our constitution is a constitution that is asking every executive authority to be accountable to the representatives of the people for the activities that they engage in. And that principle will be diluted by the suggestion. Because what is happening here is that that accountability is failing. What is causing us to have the Nyati case is because those entrusted with the responsibility are not carrying out that responsibility. And it seems to me that there isn't sufficient questions being asked from the point of view of accountability for those to respond to that. Now, of course, if I've got a headache, I take Panadol. But that is a simple problem that requires a simple solution. If I've got a heart attack and a heart disease, there's medication that I can take to get that sorted out. But there's something more that is required. And that something more is the change of behavior, is the change of attitude. In this instance, the change of behavior and the change of attitude is the respect for the law and the respect for the constitution of the country. I think that that is the problem that we have. And hence I'm saying that when you do it the way such as said, it doesn't solve the problem. I think the proposal that we put him on the table will have the same effect, but will not undermine the accountability issue. When questions have to be asked by Parliament in terms of the portfolio committees, scope relating to those particular agencies, those agencies will say, we did not effect this payment, data to this deed. So why are you asking us about this responsibility for that amount of money? And state attorneys cannot answer for the department, same as the treasury cannot answer for the department. So while the solution, I think we need to think and find a solution, but we should also try and find a solution that allows the accountability lines that are required in the constitution not to be broken. That would be my appeal.
Justice Mahoro has
for the sake of progress, could I ask the following simple question? Without pushing the minister to sign, is it not possible to request the minister to sign immediately, bearing in mind of the agency? I had a conversation with the minister this morning. He's gone to cabinet. I will have further conversations with him later on the canvas of cabinet. I expect that he will sign, maybe with some additions on this proposal that you put on the table. Therefore, this proposal will be before the committee as the trailer is positioned in the morning.
The problem. The problem is, it's all very well to talk about the complaint. Firstly, sorry, Chair, do we have to have the air conditioner on? I think it's 17 degrees outside.
Yeah, earlier it was stuffy.
But look, it's all very well to complain about departments not performing when we are being put in a very difficult position by Treasury in terms of not having the information. Which we should have, and I think, quite frankly, that it's in the same category as what we're complaining about. I mean, how are we expected to finalise this bill when we're just not given the information after months? Obviously, this bill doesn't seem to be a priority for Treasury. And then, look, if one looks at the Makolo judgment, then where does this role for Treasury come from? That Treasury doesn't like now came from themselves. So members have got a copy of the judgment. So it's the one with Makolo's judgment, page 21, submissions by the Minister of Finance, paragraph 37. The Minister of Finance presented this court with a procedure which allows for a judgment credit to simply serve the relevant Treasury with a final judgment order for payment. The amount paid by the Treasury would then be set off against the budget allocation of the relevant department for the current or future financial year under the relevant vote. These submissions are largely supported by the applicant. So in other words, what Minister Finance was saying, that would have been Minister Manuel at that time, was if there's a final order, just bring us the order, we'll pay. We'll get the money back.
All appeals have been
final order. Final judgment order. Look, I think the issue that came from Treasury. However, we've got to, it's not a matter of we've got to come up with the right system and we've got to ensure responsible government. I don't like this provision because from the report from Mr. Galula yesterday, there are still disputes regarding judgments. And if you follow this order, it's very nice, it's very simple, but you're then going to end up having the Speaker of the Northwest Legislature paying for the liquor bills of a party that a political party had. That's effectively what could happen. So I don't like it. If you look at Makolo and the process, it's basically you get the final order. If it's not satisfied within 30 days, it must be served. On the officials together with a certificate by the registrar of no appeal, review or decision. Okay, and then they have 14 days of service settlement after service to settle the debt. That is the relevant Treasury. And then if it's not paid, then you start attaching. And remember the whole issue, constitutional issue, was to allow attachment to state property. And it's been pointed out that I'm not sure where the certificate comes from, but the certificate actually wasn't a good idea because it's a certificate to yourself, that you're not challenging it. The business we've got at the moment is state attorney has to inform the executive authority and accounting officer within 7 days, and final court order must be satisfied within 30 days. And if it's not satisfied, then you can start attaching. Now, I think for me the one issue is role of state attorney, and then I think this provision that we generally seem to be in agreement here today with people wanting to go from the state attorney that any claims against the state have to be served on the state attorney. That is quite essential. I don't think the issue of the state attorney settling the debt, I mean, where they're going to get the money from is a big amount. Yes, but they've got to, you know, in terms of money in government is in compartments. Okay. So they don't have in their budget, they don't have that money. So I'm not really that in favor of the state attorney paying. The one issue is other aspect of touch is that, okay, we don't legislate for inefficiency, but we do, which can by creating penalties which should then be used. Now, we haven't looked at the penalties of the TFMA, which I think we would still need to do to see what can be beefed up. I think the issue that we've got is whether once the final court order that's not been proceeded with, should, in terms of the bill, that it goes to the relevant department, and they must pay. And if they don't pay, then you can attach. In terms of the Makhura judgment, as recommended by the Minister of Finance, it goes to Treasury, who must pay and then recoup the money. As I said, I've got some reservations in terms of what happens in that Northwest case. So definitely there should be a role for the state attorney, but the state attorney who would have been involved from the beginning would be able to say, look, we are not, there is the provision under 7 of the new 8 that a party may apply to the court. That's only for the execution. But I think that what happens then in the Northwest case, the Northwest legislature case, where final order is granted, I suppose the remedy would have been, should have been a rescission. I think the difference is, I'm sorry, I'm sort of to-ing and fro-ing, but I think the difference is between what's in the bill and what is in the judgment is the money is more likely to be paid in the Makhura judgment than in the bill, where it's simply up to the accounting officer. Is there a way of ensuring that there is responsibility to the accounting officer? I don't know. Look, I'm now moving back towards Treasury paying, but maybe with a proviso that consultation with the state attorney.
If we reject it, we will not reject it. And we agree that Treasury made that proposal to the court itself, then they must accept that responsibility. It now seems to me that the present
accountability, responsibility of the county officer of the past. And I think there is some merit in considering that. However, when it comes to whether, if you look at the first one whether a debtor, a creditor rather, like a small enterprise, goes bankrupt because the accounting officer didn't pay. I don't think that is right. That should be avoided. So I think for me it would be a question of, is there some way of maybe the issue would be put as a penalty. So it's not an issue of the executive authority penalizing. It's a question of essentially accounting officers of the department. Maybe divide up the thing. 30 days to pay. Send on both serve on both Treasury and the accounting officer of the department. If the accounting officer does not pay within 40 days, then Treasury must pay the remaining 40, and the accounting officer must be formally sanctioned. But I think the issue, because also this was interested with the first case, and it's post mortem, but the first one from Mr. Galwula, this Northwest one, but I see that the payment took a year. I can't find the document now, but I see the payment took a year from date of judgment to, it's for two pieces. First one on Mr. Galwula's document. Date of judgment, 1st of October 2009. It's the one for 19,000. Payment was effected on the 11th of October 2010. So it took a year and 10 days to effect payment. Now, I'm not sure who Mr. or Ms. Motupi and Pule were, but I mean, that would of course with small business serious cash flow problems, which is unnecessary. And the state. So basically, in short, Chair, what I'm saying is I don't agree with the idea of the state attorney paying, because it's simply not in the appellate level by this point. I do believe the state attorney should have a role to avoid a situation where the final order is not something that is cast in stone. So I do believe they should be consulted. I do believe that we should find some way of getting responsibility on the accounting officer of the affected department, but ultimately Treasury should pay. Obviously, if Treasury doesn't pay, then you start attaching. You have to attach from the department. And I suppose, look, I mean, Treasury could always say, I mean, just in terms of Mr. Mavalo's point, the responsibility. Okay, we're not paying. You've got the money for this. We're not paying. We actually don't think it is so urgent. The debtor is the person who owes the money is Murray and Roberts. They can cope. Go and attach. And it's then the department, the local provincial department, gets attached, and the responsibility comes in that side. So I don't know. But what one wants to avoid is a small business which goes under because the accounting officer didn't get his or her act together.
Treasury itself made this proposal. I think Treasury should pay out. And really the only concern left on Treasury's side is that somewhat esoteric, although constitutionally and the sounds concerned that people should be held accountable. It's think the previous finance minister never stopped saying. But the mechanisms for that exist, and they exist in the form mostly of the portfolio committees for all of the various departments, and making them scope out more efficiently. And perhaps, I mean, Treasury is always writing instructions to departments that is not about how to account. So surely one that created a new reporting requirement would say you must report annually on what amount of money were withheld from your project because you set aside. Yes. I mean, those mechanisms can be found elsewhere. But the main thing is that the citizen has been stopped. Yeah. And I agree with you.
I quite like this proposal of straight in this paper with one simple reason, and that is that they are involved in the litigation and they are practically, for all intents and purposes, the ones dealing with the matter. They know how much the plan is, they've got a good idea where it's gonna, you know, where it's gonna end up, how much it's gonna, you know, fairly probably how much will be awarded. The budget issue is obviously a problem, but could we not have some kind of compromise with Treasury with the suggestions they were making initially? They were saying anyway that they will consider withholding the money from the department's budget. So why can they not do a combination of the state attorney with Treasury and let the state attorney start creating a budget for claims that they know are in the pipeline and general claims based on amounts that they've, you know, conceived over the last number of years, what the average sort of civil claims are against all departments. But create that kind of budget and then together with Treasury, I agree that you must hold the department accountable, but then withhold that money from that department anyway. And I think combined with Dean's suggestion of reporting on that as well, how much money would you have had and how much has been withheld from Treasury because you haven't actually budgeted? Because that will then enable a quicker payment. If we're going to get Treasury involved and the department involved and then the attachment, it's going to create a whole long process again. Surely it's easier to say, state attorneys involved, we get the thing served on them. They know all along what the proceedings are. You don't have to worry about trying to find offices or departments, whether the department's going to send the documentation to the state attorney or not, or to the relevant person in the department or the accounting officer. In one place, it goes to the state attorney, they're responsible, they pay, they claim back with assistance of Treasury from the department.
I will not
attend
the
All proteins are enzymes, but not all enzymes are proteins. Let me demonstrate this analogy. You go to a doctor complaining about a headache, and the doctor might give you a cure for your back, but it's linked to the pain that you're suffering. He might prescribe paracetamol. In other words, personal ingredients cure the pain, whichever way it comes, whether it's grandpa, another, anarchy, whatever the case might be. I've been thinking about this, and I've raised it and I've shared it with some of my colleagues, for compliance point of view, for the state of that application to comply. And this is the state, whether it's justice, treasury, let me draw your attention to paragraph 38 of the report. The second and the last sentence. The order says, is to be accompanied by a certificate of validity and validity by the registrar of paragraph. If 14 days after service of the judgment debt remains unpaid, the river treasurer shall cause it to be settled itself, or make a settled arrangement with judgment creditor for settlement. Let me go again to paragraph 53. The Minister for Finance also proposes that this court invite the provincial treasurer for comment on his submission. Obtaining the views of provincial treasurers for consideration and incorporation could have been an internal process which should have fed into the submissions of the minister who speaks on behalf of the Department of Treasury as a whole and National Treasury. Solving the issue of an interim order to accommodate further submissions would further delay the fulfillment of the state's constitutional obligation and cause added prejudice to the judgment creditors. The need for finality is important. I still think there is room for the state to fulfill its constitutional obligation in terms of satisfying its responsibility, making good its oaths in terms of the ordinary citizens of this country. If you look at Nyati, David Nyati died not having realized a single cent of the judgment which the state took long to effect. I'm talking about the interim order where the state ordered $317,000 to be paid to Nyati
for his medical
expenses. And if we go about navigating on what we ought to do in implementing this judgment, we will not meet our deadline here. I'm sorry. Now, I want to raise this point again and say, can't we find a framework or an institutional arrangement intergovernmentally to further our responsibility in terms of satisfying this court judgment as the state, whether we're located within Treasury or located within the state as we already do, and from us we can do that if there's an interim arrangement, except for garnishing orders. Except for garnishing orders, which will not take the responsibility because it goes against particular individuals. Is there no way we can devise an interim or a dispensation? I've raised it with my colleagues in the State Assembly office. They say, yes, we can do it. We are doing it properly. That is the point that the state could have a responsibility to ensure that judgment is set. Thank you.
I'd like you, both you and the Accountant General, at some point to just respond to this issue. Because it might take us forward.
Accepted a settlement offer
without actually having consulted the Department of Land Affairs. And you know, so those kinds of problems can happen. So I think let's leave the state attorney for lawyers. They deal with legal issues. They are not accountants or paymasters. Let's leave them out from the payment. Now, I had earlier raised that the state attorney should be consulted by Treasury. But thinking about it again, I don't think it's necessary to provide for that. Because if we provide that the service must be on the state attorney, then the state attorney is going to be involved in the beginning. One can assume that they would be in the know as to what is happening, and therefore would be able to advise a Treasury. I think that the then the provisions of the Makoro order should be followed. In other words, that the order gets served on the relevant national provincial treasury. I mean, we can change the order around. We can maybe say the final order gets served on the accounting officer of the relevant national and provincial department, as well as the executive authority of the department, and the relevant national provincial treasury. So she puts treasury in the beginning. You can put the end, but the emphasis is on the actual offending department. I don't think we need the certificate. We dealt with that yesterday because it's certifying to yourself, basically. Treasury essential caused the debt to be settled. It was 14 days. It's now changed to 14. If it's not satisfied within the order must be satisfied within 30 days. This 14 days is not here. I'm not sure we can look at that within the Makoro order. The relevant treasury shall within 40 days of service of the order before the judgment debt to be settled, with self-settled judgment debt to make acceptable arrangements. And then, should the treasury not do that, it gets attached. We could reword it to ensure that the department must settle the debt, saving which the treasury should month. So I think we look at that. So I'd want to make those as suggestions, and then maybe the provisions under 7, the existing 7 around parties being able to approach the court. That only applies to stopping attachment. Presumably, something goes wrong. You get this final order that a debt must be paid. Treasury asks the state attorney what's going on. The state attorney says, no, that one was a mistake. Something happened. Presumably, there would be a remedy to government. Government would be able to apply for a decision at that point. They don't have to statutorily provide and make an allowance for that. That would be apparent, surely, and that would be the state attorney. So I don't know. I don't know what that framework basically sounds like. But I think, really, having seen the original proposal from the Minister of Finance, whilst being sympathetic to the fact of ensuring individual accounting officer accountability, we cannot follow what the Accountant General is raising, that Treasury can't pay because the individual officers, the financial officers, have taken responsibility. Because that approach resulted in the Senyata's death. It could have resulted, I don't know, it may have resulted in the Motupi Pule business going bust. Because 19,000 was paid, so we can't do that. Obviously, because of provision for attachment, there is a way out of Treasury doesn't pay and then you attach. So Treasury could say, no, this is Murray and Robert, buy 50,000 rand, they can survive, go and attach it to the department assets. And that's fine. That could be done. So we do need to allow, that's where the Treasury must pay thing maybe needs to be looked at. And maybe a provision that if Treasury doesn't pay, that they provide, I don't know, Parliament with reasons why they didn't pay. So then the responsibility aspect would be in terms of the part of getting it good attached. But I don't know. I just think that the problem of what Treasury is saying is that Mr. Nyati will resign. And the Mutupi Kule business is like a bankrupt.
We must have a framework which will ultimately give effect. The constitutionality of Section 3, you know, in most of our people's legislation, we have the penal provisions. But the implementation thereof is a problem. It's a problem. Now, responsibility can be, or accounting officers can be held liable to affect implementing it differently. Let me give an example, Chair. After the first order was issued on the Nyati matter, we were called upon to put on affidavit cases where the state have not set aside judgment. There were more than 200 cases. There were more than 200 cases which I can share with this committee. And some ranges from 1,100 and so on and so on and so on. What we did as a department from the first order, we wrote to all accounting officers in terms of them fulfilling or paying those orders. When we went again to the Constitutional Court on the final order, there were still judgments that were unpaid. Chair, you can put whatever mechanism from the pillow front of you. Let's try to find a mechanism that will give due regard to the rights or recognition by citizens of this country to have approached the court and assert their rights against the state. And if you fail to do that, if you fail to honor that, we're still going to find another date. What I'm trying to say, Chair, is let's look at the responsibility of the state attorney in terms of assisting to effect the court judgment for the attorneys of record. But on the other side, my worry is when the state attorney is not involved, what do we do in the judgment against the state? Let's tackle that situation with a situation where the treasury can only say to a client department or kind of officer, pay this, if you fail to pay this, this is what 1, 2, 3 will happen. And most of this, my colleague can share with you, in most cases, the application to compel the state to fulfill a particular order. And those applications are day in and day out, and they are costly to compel the state to comply with the order.
Now, we would not have those obligations to compel the state to do or to effect a particular judgment if we can have a framework, which I said yesterday, for me is located in terms of how the state manages state litigation. Not the state administration, but all kinds of partners. Now, the same challenges that I raised earlier, faced by Treasury, they can only bring that notice to the attention of a Accountant General. Similar with us, we can ask for instructions to comply. And then we don't get the instructions. And I agree with Mr. Jeffrey that there are cases where state attorneys, we act contrary to the instructions of our client. We settle cases without instructions. We concede on the merits without instructions. We settle on funds without instructions. But that goes to the core of how we manage litigation, and we are dealing with it from a policy point of view. Thanks.
In those situations where you say to are you required to claim from the client, or do you just be?
What we do before we pay the client department, we hold the attorney responsible. We take him to dismissal process. We report him to the law society because that's unethical professionally. Because you act on the interest of the client. So you can't concede or do something without instruction of the client to process it. The second thing is that my DC get letters to say, listen, we're not paying this amount on this fees because we didn't ask you to act on our instruction, or we asked you to settle and then you proceed to us. What we do, we make good that payment, but the responsible attorney will have to, actions are taken against that responsible attorney.
Mr. Novaro, do you wish to come in?
I'm hoping and crossing my fingers, Chair, that if I come in at this point, we might be able to move forward. If I fail to do so, I will apologize in advance. But I'm hoping that what I'm going to say is likely to take us forward. And it's important that also I look at some of the discussions that have been made, and I will address myself in the end to the proposal by Honorable John Jeffries, because I think perhaps the framework that my colleague is asking for is possible, one such framework that Mr. John Jeffries is proposing. But there's a number of issues, Chair, that I think one needs to note. And the first one is that I agree with my colleague from the attorney that we can't afford as the state to have the Nyatis. We can't afford to have the Mutupis and so on. But then we also need to locate the disease that lead us to that properly, because then we can have the right solution. If we don't locate the disease that leads to that problem, we are unlikely to come with a solution that will address it. Having said what we said earlier around the issues of you can't legislate or inefficiencies, but and the first thing is that we are in this position because there's disregard for the law. We shouldn't shy away from that. People who are holding positions of authority in government, sitting in various departments, think they are above the law. And we are letting them think so because they don't ever get held accountable for that. Now, this puts us in a difficult situation as a state because the consequences of the actions of those people that are disregarding the law is that ordinary citizens suffer. And we can't be oblivious to that fact that ordinary citizens suffer, and we need to address that issue. How we address that issue is important. But I want us to, because sometimes as the discussion is unfolding, it's not clear whether we have the same understanding that we are in this problem, not because we don't have a mechanism to pay in the end. We're in this problem because people don't obey the law and nobody says anything about that, or at least to the extent that these cases have actually unfolded the way they have. Now, having said that, there are a few principles that have come out of the discussion. Mr. Gowler says that we need finality. And I think it's an important principle in the search for a solution, that the solution that we come out with must give finality. Whether I agree or disagree with Honorable John Jeffries at the moment, I think what he is proposing provides finality. Provides for a situation in which, at the end of it all, whoever the judgment creditor is, will receive full settlement of that judgment debt. Now, whether I agree with it or not, I'm saying it provides something that fits in with the principle that Mr. Gowler is talking about. The important thing about with what Honorable John Jeffries is suggesting is that as long as there's a proviso that says the fact that treasury affects the payment should not also mean that it is the National Revenue Fund that is affected. That is now the main account of the National Revenue Fund. But it is the account of the respective departments, because then it takes back the responsibility to the department, because the department's budget will be left with the amount of that judgment debt that has been settled. If you suggest anything that doesn't do that, that doesn't result in that outcome, you have watered down the responsibility, because the accounting officer will continue as if that judgment debt never occurred. And then you will be fighting with the accounting officer over settling of another debt that has been created. So the solution should go straight into that budget that was given to that executive authority and reduce that amount. Now, and I'm again, Chair, want to say that I'm not yet pronouncing whether I agree or not. Who is the person that sits at the center of that, and that happens to be the National Treasury or the Provincial Treasury, because they can see the amounts there. Once Parliament has allocated the amounts to the various departments, those departments, Treasury, are the ones that are transmitting this money to the department. Now, what we were suggesting is that instead of transmitting all of this money, if you've got a budget of 2 billion rand, and you've got final judgment debts in terms of the Mokoro judgment of 2 billion rand, sort of 1 billion rand, you only get from your appropriation 1 billion rand. And the other 1 billion rand is withheld until such time that you give us the payment instruction that is paying the money to the judgment creditor. That's what the treasury proposal says. It falls short of the treasury actually effecting the payment. Now, let me then address myself to the Mokoro judgment and the treasury submission to that process. It was important for the treasury to demonstrate unequivocally that while the judge gives the state so many months to resolve this matter, the judge is satisfied that in that intervening period there is an effective measure. So there is a context in which that proposal of the treasury as the payer of the last resort was made. Two very key reasons. One was the one that I've just mentioned, that you had a certain time frame that you needed to get from the judges in order for you to be able to resolve this matter. And then the processes that unfolded after that did not quite deliver us to that point. And again, I'm not insensitive to the point that Honorable John Jeffries is raised around us not providing the report here. It's unacceptable. I'm not insensitive to that, but I'm just addressing myself to the issue that we take us for. So, the second reason for this was that the attitude of the judge at the time wanted to make this a charge against the revenue fund, which makes it, before you allocate money to anybody else, you pay judgment debt. But again, that takes away the responsibility of the department. Our view is that only that department's budget should be affected by this matter. And if that department's budget is not affected, you are not having an effective solution, because yes, the citizens will receive what is due to them in terms of that court order, but the accounting officer will not be any better in terms of accountability. So it is important that the budget vote of that department is the one that is debited, from which this amount comes from. So if you take it from the state attorneys, if you budget it to the state attorneys, it waters down the accountability completely. Yet you can reach finality through a different mechanism that still upholds the principle of accountability and responsibility as to the Constitution. And it seems to me that what Honorable John Jeffries is suggesting is much closer to that principle. Now, Honorable John Jeffries then talks about whether the Treasury should settle just about every debt, or some debts should be settled and then there could be some discretion for some of the debts, and makes an example of big corporations and all of those things. That's something that the committee can look at. We hadn't thought that far. Now, I think that I said in the original meeting that the committee, even if we make the proposals as the executive authority and the minister, once the minister signed on this, the committee may still say that, minister, you're not going far enough. We think that in order for us to fulfill the principle of justice, which is again enshrined in the Constitution, we think that it is important that payment be made, but taken from the vote of that budget. If the legislation is enabling Treasury to do that, so it's clear that it's not the Treasury that is paying, it's not everybody's money that is affected, but it's the money of the department. The same principle that we put when we're debating the issue of which assets get attached. And then, of course, the tail end of what Honorable John Jeffries is suggesting is that if then there's no such settlement, then there is attachment and attachment goes through. It raises other questions around immovable assets if the debt is not fulfilled. So you may want to be specific in the legislation around that, so that that doesn't come back as a question to be debated and settled by court. But the legislation could be clear on that. So what I'm suggesting is that as a set of principles, one, we need finality, I agree. Two, we need finality that ensures that the accountability remains with the department, and that is in many ways. That can be achieved by ensuring that the money, the vote that gets debited to that is that of the department concerned. Then there was a question in relation to the Treasury proposal where there was a withholding of funds. We would include that in the reporting framework, that it must be reported. In fact, already there is a framework that requires that all the judgments be reported, all the expenses that have been paid relating to court judgment must be disclosed specifically. That requirement is already there. So as soon as this legislation is finalized, we'll look at the implications again in terms of the reporting framework and deal with that. Now, Chair, I know that my statements are not conclusive only because we haven't gotten the sign-off from the minister. But I think the suggestion that gets close to what I'm talking about when it comes to accountability and responsibility would be the one that Honorable John Jeffries. The only element that we are unhappy with as the Treasury is that accounting officers will just think that somebody else will pay for them. But if the money that is used to pay is not the Treasury's money, is not the money before allocation, is the money that has been allocated to the department, and that is clear in the legislation, I think it still reinforces the principle of accountability for that department. And then the legislation can also further say that the accounting officer, whether the money has been paid by the Treasury or not, the accounting officer must appear before. In fact, if the money is paid by the Treasury, that accounting officer has got a lot more to answer, because it already violated the PFMA and must be charged in terms of Section 85 because of financial misconduct. And we do refer to financial misconduct in the proposal. It's unfortunate we haven't seen it because the minister had not signed. but we also do make reference that when the account officer is not paying, he's already breaking the law, and that's a criminal offence in terms of Chapter 10 of the BSNA.
All right.
Thank you, Chair.
I think you need to be aware that whilst we know we didn't have a formal quorum, it's agreement in this committee that you're not going the road of immovable property. So any attachment will apply to only movable property. Okay, so you can rest assured of that. I think you must also be rest assured that you want accounting officers to be our accountant and client. So as far as that's concerned, you can put your mind at rest as well. I think where difficulty may lie is in if you are required to pay, you're going to take it from your budget. And then, well, that's where the difficulty lies. And which we would need to think about. I'll recognize you now. You see, because reading Mahoro judgment, that's not what she's saying. She's saying you pay, and then because you are the earth master, you claim from him, counting off. So it seems to me that's where we are now. That is the issue that needs to be resolved. The reporting aspect, that's very important. We get to hear about it, and that is all parliamentary committees, SCOPA, and whoever else, ex post facto. And I'm not saying that precludes us from holding the accounting officer and the client department accountable. We can still do that. So quite clearly, if you, for whatever reason, refuse to pay, there will be attachment. And there will be attachment of movable property. Okay? So that's a given. There's no more argument about it. Now, in that situation where you've refused to pay, reasons must be provided why you refuse. You may have very good reasons, you may have bad reasons, but that's irrelevant. I think reasons must be provided. Reasons must be provided to the relevant accounting officer. Reasons would obviously be provided to SCOPA and to the Auditor General. So I think the issue of the relevant department being held accountable, I don't think anyone's going to argue about that. It's just the mechanism. I think there's enough provision in the PSMA, which we may need to just look at, to ensure that it's sufficient.
Chair, you made reference to Treasury claiming from the department. I think that process still allows the accounting officer to stay without feeling the pinch of the vote. It must be offset against that budget.
Well, yes.
So in other words, it should never affect the Treasury's budget, because the Treasury's budget, the Treasury's accounting officer has not done anything that leads to this case being before the court and the judgment arising. So it should never be that accounting officer's vote is affected, but the budget of the other accounting officer. Now, all of these accounts we see
here. No, let me stop you.
Yeah.
You see, the difficulty we have here is twofold. One, firstly, Minister of Finance, the head of Treasury, said to Justice Mahoro, it's okay. You can do that. And then,
right, let me hear you first.
Yeah. Because look, I think it's nice myself. I mean, Minister of Finance says, in terms of the summary from Judge McCordle, the amount paid by Treasury would then be set off against the budget allocation of the relevant department in the current or future financial year under the relevant vote. That's what McCordle summarized what the Minister was saying. In the order, however, the judge doesn't concern herself with the niceties of that. She just simply says the relevant treasury shall cause the judge the debt to be settled, or itself settle the judgment debt, or make acceptable arrangements with the judgment creditor for the settlement of the judgment debt. Presumably, her view would be government is government. Yeah. Now, there is a wording in the bill which relates to, and remember, Treasury is not involved in the bill, which specifies such payments shall be charged against the appropriate account or expenditure budget of the department concerned where applicable. So what I really then want to, and this would be fine to assist, and Mr. Lombardo would know, I'm sure would know the procedures far better than me. If we want to allow the accounting officer of Treasury, is that the DG, okay? But anyway, okay, if you want to allow the DG to pay the money out of the budget of the Department of Basic Education, how do we provide for that? That's what you want. How do we provide for that? In the bill. Because it's effectively giving an override to the DG of Treasury. But as I said, I think the difference between what was in the McCordle judgment was, although the minister was specific, set up against the budget allocation of the department. So the minister was in fact saying what Mr. Nombalo is saying. But the judge then, in terms of when she got to her order, I think probably felt, well, that's internal. And she's not going to be bothered with that. And then it's just paid. So if we do what Mr. Lombardo wants us to do, we can make it statutory with what we expect to do. And then what are the other consequences of doing that? Because I think the issue would be that you want a regime where it gets served first on the accounting officer of the relevant department, and effectively the Treasury is seized. Okay, copied. But the expectation is, and that's where I think the wording in terms of court of order gets changed. The expectation is that primary responsibility is on the head of department to pay. But if they don't pay within a particular period, then Treasury shall pay. And either the Treasury can directly debit their account, or pay, well, that's the question I'm asking. And if they're going to directly debit their account, what would the wording be? The alternative I could see was Treasury pay it themselves, but then would be able to, and this might need to be in the legislation, set off the payment. And this is now the wording that the minister used in terms of the way the judge has summarized him. Treasury pays, but the amount is set off against the budget allocation of the relevant department in the current or future financial year under the relevant. So that, to me, rather than the DG of Treasury running around debiting other departments' accounts, I think that may be the thing of that we provide for Treasury to pay, which is what Mr. Lombardo doesn't want, but to give them what he wants, make a provision in the legislation that Treasury will then be able to, and I don't know what the wording would look like, but set off, offset whatever what they've paid from their own budget against the budget allocation of the relevant department for the current or future financial year. Yes, currently it's future financial year. So they then could say, okay, well, you know, you don't actually have the money in you, we're going to knock it off your budget for the next 3 years because it's such a large amount.
Yeah, I think the reason I'm sort of reluctant is the remarks just made by the Honourable Chairman. It seems to cover the questions that I had. Because, for instance, as I listen to the two songs, as I listen to what the gentleman has been saying, I'm wondering to myself, didn't they get an opportunity to sit between themselves as a department? To come up with a position, they seem to be arguing between themselves in front of us. But I suppose, the circumstances, because these are matters that have been done in the course of dealing with this issue. Because I was also of the view, as Mr. Nombal, that as has been remarked, that we run the danger of legislating for inefficiency. And I confess I didn't read the judgment as a whole, because I would have been interested to listen to the department or someone representing the department as to why it is that they would actually allow for a situation where we have to sort of absolve them from taking up responsibility for their inaction. And I'm wondering who would be in a position to represent this accounting officer, so that they could also give us their own views as to what they think this problem can be overcome, because the judge could see that these accounting officers are failing to do their work, and because the judge is concerned about the interest of the judgment creditor, so she decides to go straight to where the source of the money is. Hence, she is roping in somebody who's not even party to the proceedings. And it does look like, in the course of time, if we follow that route, then, as a matter of course, the Treasury will have to be cited as a party. Because even if the money ultimately will be taken off the allocation for the relevant department, it's an inconvenience on the Treasury itself, because money that would have been used for something else now will have to be found by they are working on the allocation that will be due to the offending department. So I don't know if it might help at all if we were to listen to the other accounting officers or whoever is responsible for all of them. I don't know who that would be to tell us why is it really necessary for us to be legislating for inefficiency on their part. I have not been attending some of these meetings, so it could be that these points have been attended before. But it's just something that has been on my mind. But essentially, I would think that the kind of provision we want to make is one that states it unequivocally that even if the money is paid by Treasury, it still has to be debited against the account of the offending department.
I think we agreed yesterday that we can't legislate for inefficiency. And we agreed yesterday the provision of PSMA suffice. But we do have a difficulty with the logistics. And thus far, accounting officers have gotten away with it. And what some members have said, well, it has to stop now. Because you never hear an accounting officer being made accountable. For example, in the case of David Yes, I haven't heard that the DG has been called to school or anywhere else and made to answer why he or she fails in that regard. So that's where we are. Right now, the case of does Treasury pay, and then I heard this word offset. Someone would need to explain to me what that means. In practical terms,
Mr. Novak, so that we understand it clearly. Some of us are lawyers here. None of us are accountants. So you need to help us there. And also, you need to help us tell us how in this document we put in there that process in such that it works. Yes.
We have no choice with this bill but to legislate it. Because what we have to do with this bill is provide for attachment of state property. And that's what we've got to do. So even though we technically it should be unnecessary to attach state property, because the debts get paid because of the discussion they're having, the procedure we're outlining now, we have to provide for the possibility that they are not. That's the constitutional court judgment effectively. So I just want to point that out, which to me is reluctantly legislating the commission. You understood to raise that to the point.
Okay. I would say if you limit that by explaining the offset, departments have got their funds, their budget allocations. We manage the main account of government where all of the monies that are coming to government are paid to. That is in terms of Section 213 of the Constitution. That account is called the National Revenue Fund. Then it's got sub-accounts, which is the departmental account. On a monthly basis, departments give us what they project is going to be their expenditures. And then they will request drawdowns against their allocation. So what would happen in this instance is that if you had 2 billion rands and you've got a final court order of 500 million rands, we will transfer out to the department up to 1.5 billion and withhold the 500. That 500 will not get to the department for the department to spend. Now, what we're proposing is that we withhold it and keep it until the department gives us an instruction that says this money is paid to the judgment creditor, which the committee is not happy with. Now, if we take the suggestion by Honorable John Jeffries, we will then pay that money to the judgment creditor. Obviously, the fiscal process of paying is that the accounting office of Treasury can only sign for those things that are appropriated to the Treasury. But now this legislation passed by Parliament is sort of some secondary appropriation, if you like, which then says under these circumstances automatically appropriate this money to the Treasury if the Treasury has in fact paid in accordance with this legislation. So that will in effect have the same effect of redirecting this money to the Treasury. Then the Treasury would simply not transfer that additional 500 to the department and take it to its own book to meet that obligation. And there has to be reporting requirements in relation to this. Reporting to SCOPA, reporting to the portfolio committee of the department, where consent and the executive authority. Now, that would happen, for instance, in this financial year. Now, let's take a situation where you are now sitting in March, and there's only the only amount left in the department is that for paying salaries for the employees, because we know how much that will be. So to meet this obligation, you can only withhold a portion of what the judgment debt requires. Then what that suggestion that was given to the judge was that in that scenario, we will withhold enough to pay for now. We will have an arrangement with the judgment creditor to say we will only be able to honor so much at the end of this year, and then we'll pay that, and then the balance will be paid in the future appropriation. And that would be the scenario. So it would be paid when it falls due, but if it can't be met fully from the funds of that department, then the arrangement would be made with the judgment creditor for the balance to be paid in the ensuing financial year.
I need to hear that. I see some people shaking their heads.
Right.
At some point, Mr. Gomler and come in. Well, for me, I like to look at things practically. You see, this is the first time I've certainly heard explained this way.
I'm trying to sort of move forward because I think there seems to be general agreement for the position of Treasury paying and recovering the money. Now, what we get in, we need that from you, and we need it like yesterday. So part of the worry is I don't know, Mr. Mufaro, how your office works and what else it's doing and how thick it is, but we need attention and I would have thought you're the only people who can give us a draft, because Mr. Labuschagne is not an accountant either. And I don't know if anybody from the state law advisors has a BCom LLP or anything, no? Okay. So it's basically from your side. So Chair, I think that we need a text, and I think we need it by the latest tomorrow morning. I even if it's a first draft, but there where one can get some kind of sense. Then I just wanted to start running through the process of bill versus order. And if I can start moving on a bit, is that okay?
Yes,
okay, all right. Bill is basically state attorney or attorney of record within 7 days must inform the executive authority. All right. And the final order of the department must be settled within 30 days. And the accounting officer must make the payment, and it will be charged against their own expenditure. Okay, that's the bill. And then, if it doesn't happen, then the attachment starts. Now, Mokoro was basically, if the final order is not satisfied within 30 days, the judgment creditor may serve the court order in terms of Rule 4 or Rule 9 on the relevant national provincial department. I don't quite understand that, because that is, you've got the order, okay? It hasn't been paid within 30 days. So then you're saying the creditor must in terms of Rule 4 or Rule 9, serve the national provincial treasury and the department with this order. I don't know why we need that. There's a certificate then, Makoto goes on to talk about the certificate that there's no appeal, which we've agreed is not necessary. So after then it's served in terms of rules, this is after the order's been given, 30 days have elapsed, the Treasury has 14 days to settle the debt. And then if it fails to settle it, then the execution kicks in. So I'm not quite sure those steps in that procedure. And can we, Chair, not maybe get agreement with this agreement of a role of the Treasury on steps to be followed? Because it would seem to me that okay, the requirements of the state attorney notifying the department sub 2 is important. Then the order must be satisfied within 30 days, or Mr. Labuschagne's amendment within the time period of his agreement, and the accounting officer must pay it. And that seems fine. Then
Roman 2 after that.
Such payment should be charged against.
That might change.
Well, this is for the accounting officer first. So we're first saying accounting officer will pay.
Right.
Then I think what we're putting in is if accounting officer does not pay, and presumably there would have to be time periods to be clear about this, then Treasury must pay. And then the wording would come in from Treasury of setting it off against the budget, whatever, and then whatever reporting mechanisms they want to have put in as well, that would come in there. So I think if that's how we are ordering it. What then is being left out is B of the order, which is the certificate of no appeal, which we've said is not necessary because you're certifying yourself. But what's also being left up omitted is A, which is serving the order in terms of Rule 4 or Rule 4 or Rule 9, where I don't quite see, and maybe somebody could explain to me through your chair, what the point of a 3A is. Because you've got the order, you've got to pay it within 30 days. So presumably, is it because you didn't know you got the order? But yet you've left that out, okay? Why have you left it out? You have put in the provision that the state attorney or the relevant attorney acting must inform the things. That's where that comes from. But what's the point of A, and why was it left out if the intention was to ensure the state knew what was going on?
I don't know why it was left out, but I think the reason for it in the court order was to ensure that people in the state knew about it, because as we've seen, things sometimes slip through the cracks. Sometimes you get people judgments in a Catalan court or something like that, and things slip through the cracks. And I think the purpose of serving the order so that we know this. Add to what Mr. Jeffrey is asking, including the South, at which point is Treasury informed? At which point? And who informs Treasury? Is it the Secretary's office? Someone has to inform them. The relevant department, understanding the implications, are you able to help us? Okay.
In terms of the Niyati order, the judgment creditor submits, or through their attorneys, they submit a court-certified court order to the Treasury when it hasn't been paid by the department.
Yes. I don't know. I think it would be more to about the government. Why you left out A, I think it helps the state.
Because at the moment, you've just got it up to the state attorney, and it's up to the or the attorney that they've got acting. That's what you put in. Now, Mokoro helps us by saying, okay, you put in another step, which is this requirement of serving the order. Okay, and there that it answers your question, Chair, that order then gets served on Treasury. So you might have got a judgment against the Department of Education, Basic Education. Nobody knows about it. It was served on the State Attorney, but it wasn't administered at the bridge. I'm sure it happened. In the state attorney's office, and there was a default judgment. Nobody knows about it. So they've got default judgments against the department. So instead of wanting Mr. Labuschagne's paragraph 2 in the bill, that the state attorney or the attorney of record appearing must inform the department 7 days after the notice, instead of having that, where the state attorney doesn't know because they misfiled it. Instead of that, we go back to Mokoro 3A, which is it hasn't been paid after 30 days after it not being paid, it must, the order must be served on the department, the minister or MEC, and the treasury in the state attorney. And then, sorry, what is Mokoro A, 3A, put in there? We leave out the certificate, and then this is then where the thing comes in about who pays. I mean, maybe at the moment the Mokoro thing is 14 days, must be paid within 14 days by treasury. Maybe we divide it in half and we say it must be paid within 7 days by the relevant accounting officer. If not paid within 7 days, it must be paid within 14 days, within another 7 days by treasury, and treasury is then able to recover. So how is that as a framework? But I think the key thing for me is was it not better, was the existence of 3A in the Mokoro order not better off for the state? It's more cumbersome for the plaintiff, because in terms of the bill, the plaintiff doesn't have to do the additional step. They can, but I think it helps the state, given that there may be a situation where the state attorney are not aware of the default judgment, or the relevant department went to private lawyers who have also mixed everything up and are not aware. So, Chair, I think it's a question of, focus question of, can Mr. Lovescott or anyone else explain why you opted for sub 2 of the bill instead of 3A of the Mokoro order?
I mean, why in the Mokoro judgment this has to only happen after 30 days? I mean, and I think that's what's being dealt with now. I mean, in my view, the order should be served as soon as it's granted, not after 30 days only, because it should rather be served immediately on the state attorney and the accounting officer. Because if the accounting officer is liable criminally for not complying with an order which he doesn't know about, you know, it's going to be a valid defense for him to say, sorry, I didn't know about the judgment, so therefore I'm not responsible. I don't know. I mean, maybe the station can tell us that. But, I mean, you know. Well, I don't know if the accounting officer is necessarily represented in the case. I mean, the department at least is represented, but if the accounting officer, I don't know. But, yeah, maybe we can clarify that. But, you know, I do think that, I mean, it's provided for in the Mokoro order after 30 days. So why don't we try to make it before the 30 days? Immediately it's granted, state attorney and the accounting officer gets notified. Because one of the concerns of some of the commentators was that what happens if the state attorney doesn't inform the accounting officer. We'll deal with that issue. And then we can either do treasury at the same time, or we can do treasury after the 30 days if they have to pay. But, I mean, I really think that we should inform them straight away. I mean, serve it straight away.
But what we would like is when the order is paid, that we should be informed either by the clerk of the court or the judgment clerk, because it's going to be in his or her interest to bring to our attention, especially when we've acted, that judgment to be satisfied.
Wrap up something. I mean, I think that given, I would have given you a report yesterday about the clerks of the court. I think the only person, given the problem of the existing wording of requiring the state attorney or attorney of record, the best person to be informing the department is the creditor. Because they're the ones who have the interest in the debt paid. Because effectively, state attorneys hopefully won't, but can make it a mess up. Private attorney, yes, if he can. Okay, and because they're private, there's no recourse. And from Mr. Gawula's report yesterday, clerks of the court are not particularly reliable. So the issue then is on the Chaser's point. Should there be a requirement that the creditor must serve the order immediately, does not have to wait for 30 days for it not to be paid, but serve it immediately, and then after you have the time period kicking in, or should it be as in the order that the credit has to wait 30 days for it not to be paid and then serve the order and then shorten the time period. But I think the key thing that I wanted to say on what Paula has said is let's not make anybody else responsible for telling the state for the debt. Let's make the responsibility on the creditor. Because everybody else may not make up.
I'm not sure how I understand the challenges regarding whether or not the clerk of the court or the registrar informed in terms of this. But that is why 3A of the in terms of Rule 4 and Rule 9 of the informed, those are normal processes in terms of expecting services.
If the judgment creditor makes the appeal, the person doing the creditor.
May. Are we using the word?
Yes. If you decide you don't want the debt paid after all, you can't take money. So there's the right thing. You can't force them to.
Well,
the
institution
is to do that.
It's in their power. It will be in his interest. But once again, it can draw to our attention, then we are like messengers. We'll then bring it to our attention of the account officer or executive authority for purposes of compliance. Now, and treasure.
The wording of Mokoro A is, I think Mokoro A is fine, 3A, which is basically creditor serves the accounting officer and the minister of the department. Okay? Yeah. And then the relevant national or provincial treasury and the state attorney. Okay. No, but I'm saying we changed the order to give emphasis to the accounting officer of the relevant department. So it would be accounting officer of the department, minister or MEC, state attorney, and treasury at the end. Okay. So that's all done. It's a question of, and that's done by the creditor. It's a question of when. Is it done immediately that the order is got? Or must the creditor wait 30 days for the debt not to be paid? Mokoro was the creditor must wait 30 days for the debt not to be paid. The disadvantage is then concertina's things at the end. But this will always be an option of the creditor, not something that they have to do, because maybe they don't want their money after all. This is only if they want to start attaching property that the procedure to be followed. Well, it makes sense. I'm worried about it makes things more onerous on the creditor. That's my worry, because the way Mokoro is worded is that hopefully once the creditor's got the order, then they can just sit back and wait for their money to be paid within 30 days. And they don't have to do anything. And they only then have to start serving this order if they haven't been paid within 30 days. So maybe that would take away 50, 60, 70% of the cases, or only 10%, I don't know.
I think it's important that once the court order, the final court order is issued, what Honourable Jeffrey is saying should happen at that time. And the reason is that we've got a regulation in terms of the provision that says judgment orders must be served within 30 days in Chapter 12 of the PFMA. Now, if we know upfront that there are these judgment orders, we can then set in motion processes within the Treasury that begin to converse with the Department to ensure that these things are settled early, rather than wait for that time when we're going to have to offset. So if we know early, we would be sleeping if we don't take any action at that point, because we can begin to, put pressure on the Department to pay early enough.
Let them do that. Then, look, the other aspect was the final judgment. Now, we've agreed that there's no certificate as provided for in 3B of the portal, because the person is certifying, the registrar is certifying themselves. Okay. Now, I don't know whether looking at this document at the time limit, there is ever such a thing as a final judgment. I think the issue would be that you get the default order, you serve it on the 40 people. And the accounting officer must pay, the data treasury must pay, but obviously if the accounting officer says, no, this is all wrong, we're appealing, we're applying the decision, then the whole thing stops. And there needs to be a clause to that effect. So I don't know if one needs to talk about final judgments and a requirement to be a final judgment. Okay? Because you don't know when it's going to be final. Then you've got the problem of certificates. So you've got this judgment. You can start then forcing the state to pay, but obviously, if there's any appeal or application for appeal or rescission or review, the thing gets put on hold. That's probably the difference of what the city-day period is. Well, the thing with the city-day period is that only counts for appeal. From your document, I mean, rescission you can apply at any point.
So
that's why I'm saying, do we need a requirement of final order? When the order, should it not be the order is deemed to be final, unless there is an appeal, review, or application for rescission lodged?
decision to be a very unusual thing. I don't think you'll be worrying too much about that. The normal thing would be probably going to take you on the field or not. And if you give them the 30 days, the steps would be taken in that time if they were going to take you. The decision is really to find out later on if it's going to begin to find out if something really funny happens in the investigation. But I'm hopefully with the service on the state attorneys, it will obviate the need for rescission and default judgment. But we do have these examples from Mr. Gawula's report of the Northwest Legislature where the only remedy is rescission if it's wrong. So there are cases where and there seems to be a number of those in the report from the state attorney's offices where the judgment was wrong largely because nobody knew about it. I mean, you yourself had said with the garnishee orders that a lot of those relate to maybe not being able to insufficient information relating to the person concerned. So I don't know if nobody seems to like this apart from me, but I don't know why. Can there be a relook again, and can my colleagues sort of tell me or why do we need to have this requirement of a final judgment? Why can it not be that judgment is deemed to be final? You don't have to word it like this, unless, but that if a application for appeal review or rescission is made, then obviously proceedings for the recovery and payment of the money are stayed until those that interlocutory proceeding is essentially finalized.
Mr. Solimari, the immediate answer will be, if you look at the court on the show, keep the final order.
I think there is no time for anyone to talk because the Accountant General seems to attribute everything that's being said by anybody else to the Honourable Jeffrey anyway. So I want to just say, I think he has got a point in the sense of when you look at these time periods, the only one where it's really sort of very strict time is appeals. And I do think there may be merit in the re-looking at the definition of final order. I do think we do still need to have maybe final order. But we look at the definition of final order not to include rescissions and reviews as we suggested we should yesterday, but just stick to the appeals. Although, because even in the magistrate's court, rescissions only got to be brought within 20 days, but after obtaining knowledge of the judgment, so that could be any time. So, 24 days, and then you never know when the person's going to, get knowledge of the judgment potentially. So, I mean, the only real fixed time period that we could rely on is appeals, which are strict. So perhaps we should re-look at the definition of final order just to include the time period expired for appeals to be lodged, and then go from there.
Order, final, and then appeal or review or other process. So why do we need this definition of final order? It's not as if, okay, I'm going to grant you a temporary order that you must pay the money, and then I'll come back and look at it, and if I'm wrong, then you must pay the money back again. It doesn't happen like that. It's an order that you must pay.
Yeah. Now, maybe the thing is with the final order. Let me give an example. A court, let me just speak to Nyaki. The former Chief Justice, Pant Langer, refused to commence a court proceeding in the Constitutional Court unless he was convinced that we had to give him proof that an amount of time in 70,000 $670,000 was made, proof, a check, whatever the case, and then he refused to proceed. Now, an interim order is depending on a number of things, whether appeal or to compel, or to give an opportunity to the other party to make submission response to what the court would deem, ultimately to make a final order. Now, we can say the order is, it's an order unless subject, or unless the appeal is lodged or whatever, but there is something as a final order.
About different matters. When it comes to debt and payment of debt, those are not interim or final. So an interim order would be when you've got an application and you get an interim order to say stop doing this or do this. Okay? And it's then up to, it later decides whether that must be made final or not. So that's your interim and your final. So that's about action. We're talking about debts owed to creditors of the state. And where a court says this must be paid, is that ever not final? So wondering about it, has the concept of a final order not come in from somewhere else? Because, and the point is, the key thing to say everybody's clear is it's in the money, where the court will make an order that a debt must be paid. Is that order not always final? It's never an interim order until such time as it's appealed against, review, taken on review, or an application is in. That's the question. I don't know.
A final order is an order which finally is definitive of the issues between the parties. Right? That is what a final order is. It's more is one which is in fact. And the question of the certificate in the state of no appeal, no review, that basically just turns things strictly into the fact that this is now, basically a position is now finished at clock. There's issue final order, finally defines the issues between the parties, there's no appeal, no review, no application for decision. You could have one. I'm a little bit sure if we know where the final order is.
Yes.
Yes.
But how then distinguish orders in respect of interlocutory application?
I think the thing to me is where the confusion might have come in is if we do keep the term final order, which is known, everybody knows what it is, final order rather than an interim order. Okay? That's basically it. What we don't link it to, and it's where is this brought into the state, the parties have the court has finalized the matter. This particular court has finalized the matter. That's the final order. It's not coming back to the court. Where the confusion has come in is the definition in our bills, which says that no, a final order is actually an order in which there's no appeal. And I think that's where we need to separate it out, because so we keep final order and we link it to final as opposed to a interim. But we don't have this requirement of a final order is one that's not being appealed against or taken on review or being considered. Because if that happens, that is going to force proceedings anyway. and you may only want to, you may only know that much later. So it should not be a requirement. So hence, yeah, basically that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that maybe that is the answer. We refer to final order, but we don't define it, because we all know what it is. But I mean, I think we did decide yesterday also that instead of a certificate, we would maybe include a requirement in the bill to say that no order shall be issued, and you know, if there are appeal, review, or decision pending. The order that must be granted, or the warrant, it will be the warrant. The warrant could be issued if there was, so we do need to just put that requirement in as well, so that when the registrar issues it, then that is deemed to be the case, so we don't need to certificate. And the reason why I also realized we don't need to certificate is because, in fact, you know, the only person who's going to be applying for review, appeal, or decision anyway is, in fact, the state itself. So we really don't need that, but we do need to be assured that when the clerk or registrar does issue a warrant of execution, that they do it not under circumstances where there has been an appeal, review, or decision applied for. But yeah, maybe just put in final order, because there can be interim orders, but generally, you get your interim and your final order, but generally, Honourable Jeffrey is correct, unless there is an appeal review, then it is final order. So maybe just not use it as definition.
Okay, thank you, Chair. I would like to touch upon the matter of whether to retain the definition of final order or not. Chair, the purpose of having a definition in legislation, Chair, is to clarify matters for the ordinary person on the street, Chair, not just us sitting here in this room, Chair, understanding what the final order is. The government creditor, Chair, who is going to be submitting the final court order to supposedly the National Treasury, Chair, the accounting officer, and everybody, Chair, will be an ordinary person on the street, Chair. I believe, Chair, or I submit, Chair, that we are retaining the definition of final court order, Chair, so that the government creditor may understand what the final court order would be, Chair. We could even expand on it, Chair, to include the final court order will be qualified by, we won't be submitted, Chair, if there's still a review application pending or an appeal pending or any other application, Chair, that is pending. Chair, in my view, Chair, I think it won't make any harm, Chair, to retain the definition of final court order, Chair, in the bill itself, Chair. It does not contradict anything in the bill itself, Chair. It does not conflict with any provision in the bill, Chair. Thank you.
I think the very fact that we've been having this discussion shows that we are even confused by this definition, so I can't imagine what the members of the public are going to do. If we do keep it, then I would go with my initial suggestion that we don't include it as precisions and review. But that we leave it as they've put it here, only once the time for noting an appeal has expired, because of the uncertainty of the time periods regarding decision and review. And that would be the answer then to one of the queries that was raised about review. Why didn't we include review? That would be the answer, because the time periods are too indistinct and undefined and open. And then we'll never end up having an order. But I was quite happy not to define it. But if we do, then I think maybe we should go with the initial draft.
Right now. We can get back to some other stage. Right now.
now the draft really question of you is what's important from your perspective. And in order to assist your people in your office, we're going to give you the working document, the last copy, the original vote, and what else should we have.
Six, I already emailed the working document to the end yesterday.
Okay.
I think that all will be. I just wanted to check the government website so that is available. I don't think they. Maybe it is easier. I've also submitted to them my document summary of comics. So they're also in possession of that. In that document, as we go through, look over it today, there are still a few issues on which I think they should sort of, or respect of which we require input from them.
The point I was pointing out is on section 216, subsection 2 of the Constitution, which says that National Treasury must enforce compliance with the measures established in terms of subsection 1. Subsection 1 talks about having norms and standards inform expenditure classification. And then said, and may stop transfer of funds to an organ of state if that organ of state commits serious persistent breach, material breach of those measures. And now the issue we're dealing with here relates to section 216(1)(c) of section 216, so the material and consent breach of the issues that come out of uniform treasury norms and standards around the payments, paying at whatever time and so on. The treasury has the power to withhold funds, but the Constitution does not take that power further to utilizing those funds to pay somebody else. That is one of the things that has made the treasury to think about withholding and then put pressure on the department to process the payment. The payment still be done by the department. Now, if the legislation passed here takes this further and grants that power to the treasury, we will draft the clauses as agreed earlier. But what the committee may have to have regard to is the possibility that some may challenge that provision as perhaps unconstitutional. I don't know.
Mr. Chairman, see the two things being immediately related, unless I'm missing. No. I know, but it doesn't prevent, and I apologize for arriving late, but the ANC and the DA cannot master a quorum by themselves and trade an industry, and it was called very forcefully by the Honorable Fab, who you know can be very persuasive. So I don't want to bring it back. I'm just addressing you on this specific point raised and the application of this provision of the Constitution. And it doesn't seem to be related because that's an internal mechanism. The relationship between the organ of state and the possibility of withholding money doesn't seem to be affecting third parties. And I want to take exception to the Honorable John Jeffrey autocratically deciding to cut our condition off.
That there was an agreement while he wasn't here that I could switch it off at some point. But he came late, so you weren't part of the agreement.
Somebody died and made him king.
But no, I think the issue is basically Treasury are not that happy about paying in the last resort because they feel that that will enable a cop out from the department. Can we legislate that Treasury can pay, must pay, or can pay, shall pay, and then recover the money from the relevant department now or in the future, in their future allocation? Or is that going to be unconstitutional? Mm-hmm. Can we make legislation? That's basically the question. Mr. Nombalo's concern is that it's maybe unconstitutional, and that all that can happen is Treasury can stop transfers of money. That's the question.
I understand, Mr. Chairman, but there is a gap. The provision says Treasury can stop transfer of money to an organ of state which is not acting properly. Doesn't have a bearing on the issue before us. Now, if I can speak to the issue before us for a couple of seconds, again, apologizing for my absence, but it seems to me that we have cornered ourselves, or we've painted ourselves into a corner, because we have moved away from what was a very basic principle. The state is a legal entity. Let the judgment creator find assets wherever he can. We are trying to create a principle which in itself bears flaw, that it must be done only from the department which created the liability. It is a department. If you look at the company, which is broken down in departments, you can go after any assets of the company. Here the company is the sphere of government. National government is a sphere. Provincial government are 9 entities. Local government are 300 entities. So these are the companies. These are the legal entities, which was the point I raised here. Let's identify what are the legal entities. And I have a problem. If constitutional, these are separate legal entities, I have a company in entrenching the notion that the judgment can only be recovered from a department of the company, from a section of the entity, when the entity per se is responsible for that. That could create a conflict with Section 24 of the Constitution. You have the right of judicial adjudication of the right, which has been interpreted as administering also, it's applying also to the enforcement of orders. I mean, you have the right not only to receive an order, but also to enforce that order to restore your rights. Okay, you know what I'm referring to. The one. It could be 36, I mean.
No. Dr. Ambrosini, we've come way. You still have to catch up. We've agreed that we're going to restrict this instrument to the National Department and Provincial. We are not including state-owned entities or parastatals, by the way. Now, that being the case, we have a Mahoro judgment order that says certain things. And amongst those was the fact that the Minister of Finance said, in the event that a State Department refuses to pay, Treasury must pay. Now, the debate was around that issue. And the Accountant General sitting behind you, and the Treasury officials also sitting behind you, not happy with being forced to pay. Because, they say, the accounting officer of the department was inefficient and irresponsible, and therefore they should be held responsible. Then the question arose, how? The Accountant General said that they would draft something for this bill that provides for that, whereby they instruct the department, failing which, attachment kicks in. And events that Treasury is meant to pay, the term used was offset. And we asked the Accountant General to explain, what does offset mean? And he explained it to us. And that's where Section 216 of the Constitution came in. Because we said, well, at which point was the accounting officer of the department made responsible or held responsible? He explained to us one of the ways, aside from the reporting by a SCOPA, Auditor General, the relevant the executive officer, that's the political head, and the relevant parliamentary committee. One of the ways is that Treasury can then hold back the sum of money that they were made to pay. So, in a nutshell, if I've omitted something, that is where we came. That's how far we've come with regard to that matter. Of course, it means that that relevant department then is going to have to explain why, in a given year, their budget is dropped dramatically, assuming that it's not 2,500, but 2.5 million. And there again, accounting and being held responsible comes into it. And they will be made to explain why that is the case. I still want to see someone be held accountable for David Martin's death. Well, okay.
On this specific point, I would like to actually ask the state attorney to take with you what their view on this. But I mean, my view is just because there's a provision that says that funds may be withheld in certain circumstances of persistent serious breaches doesn't preclude us from providing specifically that in the case of judgment debts they may withhold. I don't think it necessarily precludes that. And I would like the state attorney to give their views on that as well as to whether it would, because I think the constitutional provision is providing for a specific instance of persistent serious breach. And I really don't think that it necessarily is unconstitutional or inconsistent with that for us to provide for this, what we're trying to do.
I think the question is rather whether it is constitutional permissible. That is the question. And I think there shouldn't be a problem. I'm not sure whether the supervisor has a different view.
Yeah.
Because it's a responsibility to compel for a particular performance, a particular act to be done in line with the constitutional requirements. I don't think it's going to be unconstitutional.
Yes, please.
No, thank you, Chair. Say, in my view, Chair, I will compare with my little colleague from the attending office, Chair. The issue of withholding funds for the judgment data, because by your department, Chair, did not follow a court order, Chair. The PFA does provide that they have to comply with the final court order, Chair, on number one, and they have to follow it. If they do not, Chair, then it will fall under the provision that the National Treasury will take measures, Chair, in that department. And that, Chair, is consistent with 216 of the Constitution, Chair. They might use, Chair, the provision, if it is included in the appeal, Chair, would pass constitutional matters.
The question that the colleague from the State Advisor has been asked to answer is a question that I don't have a problem with. I'm saying withholding falls within the provision of Section 216. It falls within that. We can withhold it, sure. That I've got no doubt about. It is the paying over to a third party that I'm saying, and I'm not saying there is a problem constitutionally. I'm just saying there is no specific provision for that in the Constitution, and therefore, as we put the clauses that we're going to put and submit tomorrow morning, I'm requesting the committee to evaluate the conditionality of that. I'm not saying there's a problem either.
I'm glad you flagged it for us.
Yes.
Okay.
understand it correctly, and I don't want to over-labor a point. The premise is that if 216 were not there, it could not be done. 216 talks about persistence. And the word persistent, that is one of those words which are pregnant with radial meaning. It's more than one, it's extended in time, it's a situation that opposes to an action. And I understand that we want to address an action, a failure, supposed to pay a specific rate, and it doesn't. If 216 is the only constitutional basis which would enable the shift from the rules that the entire entity is responsible, and we need to have a constitutional basis, I submit to you that that won't do.
Well, 216 also speaks of serious speech.
Yeah. Yeah.
Serious, no serious, or.
The point I would just want to make is that there is a constitutional court order that presumably can't be unconstitutional. the relevant treasury will cause the judgment debt to be settled, the cause it to be settled, to make sure they pay it, itself settle the debt or make acceptable arrangements with judgment creditors. So I would have thought that is what should be followed in the bill, and then that a provision be put in allowing them to withdraw funds the amount necessary until the amount is paid, and a requirement of an explanation to. You see, I think basically from the report, which Treasury haven't presented, but from what I understand it, is that you've got everybody else, it has actually worked, you've got everybody else to pay. All the judgments, except those served in March 2011, for which we're awaiting proof of payment, have been paid by the responsible department, and today the National Treasury does not have to settle on behalf of the department today. So you're basically saying that actually it has worked. You have been able to get the relevant departments to settle without you having to pay. And I think then the bill would provide for something similar of cause it to be settled, which is what you've done, or settle it yourself, or make acceptable arrangements. If you settle it yourself, that you're able to, we would provide that you're able to withhold funds.
Just look at the date of judgment. We don't want a situation where it drags on for a whole year. Okay. I take it, Mr. Morgano, she's headed by Mr. Gaola, Mr. Young. All in contact with her. So if we don't want a situation tomorrow. I don't want a situation tomorrow where we arrive and say, well, you see, Mr. Lavascafni pointed out an important issue here. He said, you're not coordinated. I'm not sure that was my responsibility. I don't think so. And so between now and tomorrow, please try and be coordinated. And communicate adequately so that when we get here, the situation is made clear to all of us. Lovescafni still wanted to deal with certain issues which the administration is using. Then we are
out of the picture.
No, they, but they are in position of my documents. So
right.
Just want to quickly then. I just want to mention one thing to you, Jason, and that was. That was just HH060431. In which published the state liability as state liability law in 2009. And the new census year. We also had a process there based on the result
Chair, can I hear from the unbiased official?
In the state liability bill that we published in 2009, public comment, we also created a process for payment of judgment debts. That process that we created there required a constitution amendment. That's why we at the same time published the constitution 18 amendment. But now, then when we moved to the bill that is before the committee today, that constitution amendment is no longer necessary. So the point I want to make is, depends everything on what proposal we're going to get.
So what I'm asking is, what was the amendment, the constitutional amendment that was being proposed? So at least we know what it deems to require a constitutional amendment.
Okay, listen, I want to get a response. I'm trying to get a copy because I don't have one at the moment. That is something in the past. I can't even on the court. No.
Yeah, I just think it would be, we obviously cannot have a constitutional amendment, but we just, where my interest is in that, seeing there is some debate as to what's constitutional and what isn't, and I think it's the reason why Mr. Lubiskowski is raising it. Let's not try and put something into the bill that requires a constitutional amendment. And my interest will find before it is deemed if you do this, you need an amendment. We can't do that.
West MK?
My first issue is on page 6 of the document that has been listed in the Thank you.
people, that's not the important thing to do, right? This is people who are unless the human does make it kill the rest of the life of the world,
the 30 days as crafted in the bill ties in with the treasury regulations. The law society is raising a different date from which this day runs, but that is not in the bill. The bill, I think, as currently crafted, the bill is fine, but what the state law society begins to suggest, that the date must run from the date when you are notified, changes that date that is in the bill, and that would result in that being outside of the treasury regulations. Now, I don't know if that is the direction that the department wants to take. If that is the direction the department wants to take, then we can engage and see whether we change the treasury regulations or not. But the current bill, as currently crafted, ties in with the regulations. The second question is the question of an agreement between the department and so on. the Treasury Regulation consent does say that you pay within 30 days unless there's an agreement to the contrary. So it makes that specific provision in the Treasury Regulation, because sometimes you may have a contract with a service provider, for instance, because it covers all manner of obligations. You may have a contract with the service provider in which, in terms of that contract, you've agreed to pay on a certain specific term, and those terms would then be the terms that apply. So and again, the Mokoro judgment does envisage a situation where you call to settle or settle or make arrangements for settlement. The making arrangements for settlement does presupposes that maybe there may be circumstances in which, instead of being able to fulfill the whole obligation, depending on the size of that obligation, you may then agree on the terms on how to settle that over a period of time. So again, that isn't a problem. And the issue of the premier of the Western Cape in the provisions that we've put in place, in the first place, the question that was raised in the morning tied to this. You, once you know of this obligation, you must budget for it as the accounting officer. If you have not budgeted for, and there are, and it meets with the requirements of the adjustment budget, you can then put it in the adjustment budget. But you must remember the adjustment budget works on the principle of unforeseen and unavoidable. These matters you would not have foreseen unless it's a matter that arose quickly and got dealt with and settled quickly. But you do have an opportunity to do that. You do have an opportunity to reprioritize your budget if that opportunity in your budget arises. Or if you've got this obligation and you can't postpone this obligation without difficulty to the department, again, you can always approach the relevant treasury. We should make a submission on your behalf to the relevant structures that decide on the budget. And you can accelerate some of the transfers to the department to meet that obligation. But the department would have to obviously approach the relevant treasury. But the key question in the premium version gives question is that of appropriation. And a department must budget for this as soon as they know about them. And we in the submission that we have, we do make that point that accounting officers must appropriately budget for these obligations. People budget for it. Budget for all the expenses that he knows for the department. Now, can you isolate specific items? In this instance, we are specifically stating it in this bill because there appears to be doubt, at least in the minds of the Office of the Premier in the Western Cape, that you can budget for this. But in the budget regulations, in the budget rules, there is provision for budgeting for contingent liabilities. It's already there. And this would fall within a contingent liability. The danger to specifying individual contingent liabilities is that you then state others specifically and leave others, and then people say that other one is not listed, and the principal approach I think is more sensible for me.
So, Chair, just to get clarity, there's no amendment in this regard being proposed. Saying, as I understand it, that they meant to do that within existing
fiscal practices or treasury regulations or whatever. My question then is on that, if I've understood it correctly, but there's no amendment necessary in the bill.
In the bill, what we are proposing in our proposal is that as part of the clause on dealing with the fulfillment of the judgment debt, we then make, as part of the clause there, that account officers are expected to budget for these. Yes, yes.
So there's nothing, there is currently, as I understand it, allowance anyway for them, in terms of existing legislation, for provincial accounting officers to budget for contingencies. And what is that? Is the MFA, the PFMA or what?
The budget rules, the treasury regulation and the PFMA, in fact, on the budget chapter and the responsibilities of accounting officers, right, together.
Giving more time. What we are, though, however, doing is providing for a procedure for the attachment of equipment in the event of and the steps that would be taken.
What also must be noted is that we get to this point because somebody did not comply with the 30 days for paying from date of invoice, which is the original obligation that a person has. So that has fallen by the wayside. And we get to this point because of that. In most instances, although when you look at the cases that we gave you, some of them relate to different matters, particularly from correctional services and so on. But there is a time when there's a legal obligation on behalf of the state to meet a certain obligation, and that obligation is not met. Because that obligation is not met in time, we get to the point where the State Liability Act kicks in. So already when we get to this point, we get to this point after having had an opportunity for the 30 days.
My worry with the state, with the Treasury's document, is that they hope the minister will sign it. But they don't know, they can't guarantee, and the cabinet could maybe go until 5. And that maybe the minister doesn't agree with what they're saying. So I don't know if we can wait for that document at all. I think we have got, so I don't know whether come back from lunch and try and crystallize what we want in terms of the redrafting, but try and finish earlier so that they can, Lovell Scutney can go off and do it in consultation, yeah. So maybe, Chair, the suggestion then would be if it's consistent that we look at when we come back, just giving greater guidance on what we're wanting. Because, for example, with the 30-day period, we've got different things. We've got what's in the bill at the moment, which I thought we were not going for, which is the notification by the state attorney or the attorney of record. We then have got what's in the judgment, in the order, which is the creditor only comes in after they haven't been paid for 30 days. Then there was general support for actually having to give that notice right at the start to give the state more time. We've got to resolve those kinds of issues. I don't want to reopen it now, but maybe we should be looking at that. Right? Okay. How? There could be general agreement about it being at the start, but then you've got the issue of final orders, which are the complications. Then you've got the problem of, okay, you get the order, you've got to pay within 30 days. We know that the 30 days can't run from when the creditor notified the department, because that would be inconsistent with the PFMA. So we've got to do something about how soon, they must immediately notify the department. And what happens if they don't? So I'm just saying there are other unforeseen consequences arising from that. I'm actually gearing more back towards the Mokoro process afterwards. But that's something to look at. But I'm just saying it's not as complex, it's not as simple.
These lawyers look like them bunnies. You were passbooking exams, didn't you?
Pardon?
Didn't all you lawyers passbooking exams at some stage of your life?
Oh, one thing. Not the whole beast conference.
No, no.
Go. That's
I remember our lecturer speaking, so he just used to run, and he used to run from the book.
Yeah.
And then he'd flee like a child, and we'd all be sitting there going.
All I remember is David.
Well, a week before my exam, I went to my dad, and he said, Dad, what's the David and what's the present? And he said, oh dear. Okay. Probably, yeah. Oh. Well, you want to leave all your stuff?
Well, I'm just
going to
take my bag.
Would you
mind if I can leave my laptop?
Yeah. If I need to go out, I'll look for somebody to look after yours and mine. Is that okay?
Okay, no, that sounds great. I won't be long anyways.
That's fine. Sure. No, I may just need to pop out a little bit closer to you, but I'll wait for you to come back.
No, I'll
definitely
be back
by
about
you are asked already. Can you please add something more specific to those ones?
You're not going anywhere, eh?
Oh,
stay here, eh? Because I'm leaving off. No. She's arranged with me that when she comes back.
Okay.
So we'll be fine.
She left her laptop here.
No. No. I'll be
alone. Not with someone here.
I'm getting ready to fight. I'm going to leave.
Someone else coming in.
Oh, okay. Thanks very much for your help. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Well, I see you tomorrow morning.
Okay, bye. What time will you see tomorrow? Is it 9 o'clock?
I don't know. I
think he wanted it to finish by 12 tomorrow.
But the thing is, they had a meeting by 4, and tomorrow is a project service, so they have to apply for that meeting.
Oh, I see, okay. So we'll keep in touch with you. It won't be,
yeah,
or will it always be on the order
of the travel? She's going to apply now.
What
day
was that? Acting as secretary of the
meeting? She was mainly yesterday, right?
Okay.
But she was mainly secretary of the meeting.
Okay, thank you.
So she's going to apply for the meeting for tomorrow to happen now.
Okay, because she's going to be for the
time. Yeah. But yeah, she's probably going to be cancelled because the first service will leave at 1 tomorrow.
Okay. Okay.
So I think, I don't know what's going to happen because I also have to change the catering because I think I have to change to in the morning. The rain was
V-D-119,
oh, because V-119.
Yeah.
So
that's the one over there, isn't it?
Yeah.
V-119. You get up in the left and you go right the way along. The long corridor.
Yeah.
Kind of go to
the
building next to them.
Yeah.
The building
I know, yeah. Still here. I think I'm not this far.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Thanks very much.
Okay.
That's good, although Freeman's going to have further discussions with the minister about things arising in the meeting today, this morning. But, yeah, okay, but, yeah, okay, that's good to know. Okay, well, that's good. How are things otherwise? What? Oh, no, one second. Okay. Thanks a lot.